Hello and
Hello.
welcome to another episode of the Daily Remedy Podcast. Today we have Nancy, who is one of the organizers for the protest in the park, which will take place at Union Square Park, Area 15, on October 20th from 12 to 2 p.m. Eastern. So Nancy, thank you for joining us.
Hey, thank you for having me.
So tell us a little bit about this protest and what you hope to achieve.
Well, the protest is because the chronic intractable pain patients have been targeted for definite the last 5 years due to the CDC guidelines. So we've been pretty much struggling to stay alive here.
Yeah, you know, we often hear that word targeted when discussing the chronic pain community. For the audience who may not understand that word and the implications, can you help them understand what targeting means?
Chronic intractable pain. It will never get any better. You are left with a level of pain of degree of 8 or above for me, constantly 24/7 every day. And it doesn't get any better. It doesn't go away. And in a lot of cases, it just gets worse.
I can understand it. It's a sentiment a lot of people have faced. Why do you feel like so many have that the chronic pain community is being targeted? Can you help us understand that word a little bit?
What we mean by targeted is, there is a long history here. We're right now just a decade past the decade of pain, and that's when pain became the fifth vital sign. And when you're in pain, a lot of times things happen with your body, like your blood pressure goes up, your heart rate goes up because it attacks. It's taxing on your heart and other different parts of your body. I had a doctor explain to me that a chronic pain patient burns about as much calories as somebody training for a marathon running 6 miles a day. What happened is in 2016, the CDC met behind closed doors and had a meeting and devised these guidelines, which actually went against the Federation of State Medical Board's best practicing guidelines. And when we're talking about targeting, what is happening is that they took the suggested guidelines from the CDC and decided to make them a hard guidelines, and the DEA had adopted them. Now, I can't say the DEA adopted them because state legislators actually adopted them. And the DEA says they're a law enforcement organization, so they're just there to enforce the law. So when they see that, you know, I think it was in 2016, it was 120 MMEs, which is medical.
Millimorphine equivalent. Millimorphine equivalent. Yeah. Keep going. Go ahead. So sorry to interrupt.
Well, and then the DEA took that as solid evidence and says, oh, well, the CDC knows their business. So we're going on this, and any doctor prescribing above that, no matter what the condition is going to fall under scrutiny.
Certainly. So flash forward to the present. You, along with a few other people, including Bob Sheeran, has successfully managed to organize this protest. Talk to us about the organization effort and why it was a long time in the making.
A long time in the making. We actually had traction at one point of another organization, the U.S. Pain Foundation, actually had gained a lot of traction, and then, you know, that disseminated when the Etsy fentanyl spray fiasco happened, it kind of inadvertently took the U.S. Pain Foundation away out of the game, and we've been struggling to reunify to get us all there again where we were. And this has to happen because doctors, patients, we're all paying the price for the lie that is perpetuated in the media, which came to be because of the Smith Mount modernization bill that was snuck into the 2013 Department of Defense spending.
That's interesting. Now, for the upcoming protest, what do you hope to achieve? Are there any tangible goals or metrics that you want to accomplish?
I don't think it's a financial goal. I think it's time that the state legislators and the higher-ups see our faces. It's not about a financial gain at all. It's about a humanitarian gain.
Certainly, yeah. I apologize. I meant to say tangible goals. So that would include potential legislation or include FaceTime with either certain senators or representatives. Do you have any goals in mind that would come out of the protest, like meetings with key legislators?
Yeah, we want them to listen to us. We want them to take us seriously. We have been watching everything go on and being helpless. You know, the old fable is one bee isn't that scary, but when you get a swarm of bees around, that becomes scary. So hopefully we can swarm as bees by coming together. Yeah, it's here, there, everywhere. You know, we are 60 million chronic intractable pain patients. And the worst thing about it is there is only a small fraction of us that are going to be able to come to this protest. That is a serious thing, is just a small fraction of us are going to be able to, because most of us have had our meds cut so far back that they're in bed or they cannot leave the house.
Yeah, it's very tough. And one of the issues we find in the pain community is the lack of mobilization really hurts the advocacy at a grassroots level. You mentioned you want to meet with legislators. Often there's a lot of lip service among legislators. What will it take for them to finally take the chronic pain patient community seriously?
Chronic intractable pain, until you have it, you don't understand it. And that's the sad part about it. Acute pain, people can understand. Chronic intractable pain, that's like really hard for people to wrap their head around. So most legislators just like, that's made up. You know, but if they were to break their bone, you know, break a leg or break a wrong arm. You know, I think for a few of them that are in Congress, if they break a fingernail, they have a catastrophic event. But we need them to listen because lives are being lost.
Yeah, agreed. Which legislators do you feel are the most responsive? I've heard some say Rand Paul, others have said Cory Booker. In your experience, which legislators seem to be the most responsive to the pain community?
Honestly, I think they just kind of humor us and brush us off, which is really sad because they actually work for us. I'm at loss. I have not had one legislator say, hey, I saw your email. I'm returning your call.
Yeah, it can be very frustrating. That being said, how do you find the will to continue in the face of such frustration?
I have no choice. I have no choice. It's either one or the other. You give up and lie down and die, or you fight. You know, my choice to fight is one of a personal journey. And I'm a Leo. You know, you're going to tell me not to do something, I'm going to do it.
What do you hope to come as a next step for this protest? Do you hope that it'll lead to additional protests? Do you hope that it'll lead to direct conversations with legislators at the state or national level? If you had to envision what would be the ideal outcome for this protest, what would that be in your mind?
One, we want to change the faces of pain. Right now, the general public sees chronic intractable pain patients as addicts because that's what the media has portrayed us to be. We're not. We're no more addicts. I mean, it's not an addiction, it's a dependency. To switch the narrative is what I want to come out of this protest. And I want them to see the pain is real and it will kill.
Yeah, I think a lot of people ignore the inflammatory component of chronic pain and the effects it can have on the body. I appreciate you mentioning that. What's interesting to me is the mental component of pain, what you alluded to, addiction versus dependency. Can you help the audience understand the difference between those two?
I like to use the analogy of, you know, if you saw somebody down on the street hobbling on crutches and somebody came up and kicked that crutch out from underneath that person on crutches with a broken leg, you'd be kind of pissed, wouldn't you?
I think so.
Yeah. You know, in the chronic intractable pain community, we use our pain medications almost the way somebody uses a crutch. You know, it doesn't take our pain fully away, but it does take it away enough that we can function in life and take care of our grandkids or take care of our children or our husbands or our mothers and fathers, because, you know, some of us have that to do. The simple fact is that nobody sees it as an atrocity. You know, I mean, you want to put the mental health component in there. If a manic depressive was denied their pain, their medication, their antidepressant, and later go out and commit suicide, the world would be in uproar.
Yeah, certainly. That mental health component to pain is not appreciated like it is in other psychiatric conditions. But often, chronic pain gets confused or conflated with addiction and addiction medicine. Do you see those as more similar or more different?
I lost you on that question here because I can still barely hear you.
Is it not a problem? Do you think chronic pain and addiction medicine are closely related, or are they two separate clinical issues?
I think both. I think they're very closely related, and I think they're two separate, entirely different issues. I think it's an issue that the federal government has gotten all wrong, both sides.
Can you explain, you know, how did the government get it wrong?
I think the government got involved when Nixon was and started the DEA, if I remember right.
Yeah, he's the one who initiated the war on drugs many decades ago, and that's led to the draconian policies of criminalization. Certainly that has led to the conflation of chronic pain and addiction medicine. But talk to the audience a little bit more. How is chronic pain and addiction medicine similar, and how are they different? Because I think that's an important point for the audience to understand as they come out in support of chronic pain patients.
The similarities is pain is pain, no matter if it's mental or physical. And the fact that addiction, if you really study what addiction is, you're going to find out it's a deep emotional wound that hasn't been tended to. So people just tend to substitute and try and self-soothe, because as human beings, from infancy, we are programmed to self-soothe. So when you're trying to escape an emotion, that's what's leading to addiction. When you're trying to get out of pain, you know, we have pain medication for physical pain, and we have antidepressants for mental pain. Two different classifications. But if we're not careful, the antidepressants will be next that they will take away.
Yeah, certainly. We've seen throughout the history, certain drug classes targeted over time. For example, in the 60s and 70s, a lot of psychedelic medications were targeted in much the same way that opioids are currently targeted right now. Before I let you go, because I know you have to organize the rally, can you tell us a little bit about how we can get a hold of you and where we can find you on the rally on October 20th?
How to get a hold of...
How to get a hold of you for the rally?
You go to AmericanPainAndDisability.org, or you show up at noon, high noon at Union Square in Washington, D.C. We'll be there. And the American Pain and Disability Foundation's webpage is pretty awesome. We have a bunch of different things going on there. We have the Lego Challenge. We have stories. You can see what good we've done for the community and stuff like that.
Well, perfect. Thank you so much for your time, Nancy. And again, for the audience, this is Protest in the Park. The date is October 20th. The time is 12 to 2 p.m., noon to 2 p.m. Eastern Time in Union Square Park, Area 15 in Washington, D.C. Thank you so much for your time, Nancy. We appreciate it, and we wish you all the best on the 20th.
Thank you.